Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Yeah, once again, we're without Jane. It's just Bobby. It's not Jane and Bobby. But I have a couple friends with me this week. And this time around, we can genuinely say that it's the Boys and Girl Podcast. Because, like, we actually have a girl here, too, in place of Jane. Now, Jane will be back next week. She's been running around. She was doing Jacksonville and Miami this week.
In a boss.
She was. She is. And so Jane was out of pocket, but she will be back next week. And so this week I have SB Nation's Blogging the Boys duo here. They're fantastic duo. The Bonnie and Clyde of SB Nation's Blogging the Boys, RJ Ochoa.
I like that.
Who's managing editor of Blogging the Boys and also has a bunch of podcasts that he does and that he oversees, like the 750. And what else do? You do a bunch of, but the NFL show, what's the NFL show you do now?
If we're listing things,
we are,
daily update on the network, the Ocho. It's a approximately 8 minute, you know, long show every morning that gives you the latest updates. And then I'm on the 750 you mentioned every Tuesday with Tony Casillas and our new podcast at SB Nation, the SB Nation NFL show. I'm on our Monday show with Pete Sweeney and Michael Kist, Monday Football Monday. We react to everything that happened on Sunday. It was not my first choice in name for that show. I wanted it to be called Chicken or Beef, and I lost out on that battle, but that's fine.
I wonder why.
You mentioned it. I also oversee everything we do, which includes, obviously, Girls Talking Boys, the number one Dallas Cowboys show in the land, really.
Yeah, it is. And so
except for this one, obviously.
No, we're trying to up our game by taking some of those Girls Talking Boys coattails, which Kelsey Charles co-hosts with Meg Murray. And you can check out on the Blogging the Boys stream, and you can follow RJ on Twitter at RJ Ochoa, and you can follow Kelsey on Twitter at Kelsey _ Charles. Did you have to do the underscore? Because was the name Kelsey Charles taken years ago?
I don't remember. I wish I could tell you that it was super logical, but I can tell you that Kelsey _ Charles is taken on Instagram. Like, now that I'm like doing this thing where I'm, you know, on the video, on the camera, I thought that I should own my name on Instagram too. That is not going to be the case. So unfortunately there are other Kelsey Charleses in this world. So hopefully you like this one the best, but,
I do.
Yeah. I don't know the logic behind that.
I think there's a Charles Kelsey out there somewhere.
I think so. Certainly. I think so. Yeah. I think I'm still like the coolest out of like all of the iterations,
sure,
but I'm biased.
I was really thinking like I had a decent shot at being the only Twitter account that would try and have the name Bobby Belt. But no, somebody's got that. And so I had to do Bobby Belt TX after my first thing I did, which is just,
R.I.P.
You remember it. Yeah, RJ remembers it. There's no way Kelsey remembers it because Kelsey didn't know me back then when I had that one. But RJ remembers what my first handle was.
What was it?
It was beautiful. It was Prince of Darkness.
Okay, shut up. No. What was it?
It was Sports by Dallas.
It was. That's what
it
was.
But it was cool because he had the S, the B, and the D capitalized. So it was like Sports by
I to this day do it because your name is not capital.
It's like an AIM name.
Kelsey Charles is not. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I already know. I've still got to find Chaz is Hot or whatever.
Chaz is Hot 2213 and Sporty KC 2213 were my two. So
I will find those. I am not going to. You may know her. I know RJ knows her. I have we have a mutual friend who one time told me what her old name was, and I was able to dig up something from like 16 years earlier of her basically trying to cheat on a test in college by getting the answers on a Yahoo message board. And she was like, wow. Yeah, I'm not giving you any leads anymore.
Yeah, if
your
ever
skills are next level.
Yeah, if you've ever thought something, Bobby can find it and weaponize it against you. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
I am very much Penn Badgley, and I own that.
When you were the first one. When that show came out, Kelsey, I texted him because you know how I was like, everybody's watching you. And we were texting when I was like, dude, this is you. And I was like, I don't mean like the show you. I mean like this show you is literally you, Sports by Dallas.
It's like,
if you think about it though, he's also like Gossip Girl, like the other pin, like
I've
like
never
all
seen
of Penn's characters. Like you could go that far. Like Bobby is like all of those. So
XOXO. He's got the TX. That's where it came from.
I feel like it's a path. Right. And like, we're just two examples of the path, me and Penn Badgley's character. Like, here's the skill set, and you can use it for good or you can use it for evil. And like, so Penn Badgley's like, here's like, it's a chance for me to look at my life if I had a more evil streak in me and go like that. My life could have been that with this skill set.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad
for you, man.
Decided
good
this
choice.
One. I mean, not all the time. Sometimes I use it for evil. RJ, I'll tell you that. But for the most part, I think I try to use it for good. Unfortunately, the as good of a sleuth as I am, the totalitarian regime of Mike McCarthy has locked down all information about injuries, and there's not much that I could do to scrounge around and find out the details of all these questionable issues that face us. It's funny that as little as people always seem to think that Jason Garrett gave the media and gave the fan base, like, you're really understanding what not getting anything is now with Mike McCarthy, which I don't remember this being like a talking point in Green Bay that he was, you know, he played things super close to the vest. And so maybe that's a bit of a change since he got to Dallas. But yeah, I don't think we would have ever been surprised that Terrence Steele was starting at right tackle in week one during the Jason Garrett era. We would have just known at some point during the week that the plan was for Terrence Steele to start. But that's what they do. They play things close to the vest. We're left wondering up until the inactives are named as to who's even going to be out there. So this week, it's a little concerning, I think, to Cowboys fans because they aren't sure what to expect whenever they get a look at the injury report. They don't know how serious something is. So when they see names like Trayvon Diggs and Tyron Smith and DeMarcus Lawrence not practicing to start the week and they're just all DNP, then I think it creates a little bit of anxiety. And this coming on the heels of Chidobe Awuzie being announced that he's going to be out for a few weeks after getting hurt at the end of the Atlanta game. So now you have no Awuzie, you have no Brown. Jordan Lewis is coming off of an ankle issue. And you've not seen particularly great football out of him since he got back. Trayvon Diggs is a rookie, and not only a rookie, he's apparently a rookie who's banged up with a shoulder issue, and that's why he missed practice the first time they practiced this week. But I reached out, talked to some people, and there have been some reports about this. Trayvon Diggs should be fine. He practiced on Thursday. They should have him, but still you're running pretty thin there. You've got Trayvon Diggs and technically a bunch of journeymen along with Jordan Lewis. And so the Cowboys, it seems like a really poor week to have your secondary fall completely apart when you're going to go up against Russell Wilson.
I mean, I think that our secondary has been a place that has been a scary place for a while now. And I don't feel much better about it, especially in light of the news this week. I'm definitely not thrilled with the developments of, you know, the DeMarcus Lawrence conversation. I have to say, though, I was really shocked. It took us a while to truly figure out what was going on with him. I think the fact that this game in Atlanta or against Atlanta was so wild was distracting from the fact that he actually was sitting out more than he normally would in the game. So I was shocked that, you know, we didn't really truly know until maybe like Tuesday what the deal with him was. But yeah, guys, I'm nervous. I don't feel good about it. Not that, you know, I think Russell Wilson is obviously, we know what he brings to the table. And I think he looks at this and he's ready to feast. And yeah, that's scary.
I think, Bobby, obviously the lack of information is unsettling no matter what. But I think, like, I hate this example, but like Bill Belichick does anything, it's like, oh, who cares? Like, Bill's doing it. We're fine. You know, total and complete trust fall. Everything's going to work out there. And I think the fact, you know, that the Cowboys have sputtered a little bit is why people are so hesitant to trust all the secrecy. You know, like you take names and numbers off of your scrimmage jerseys and you start off 2-0 and nobody cares, but mm-hmm. you do that and you lose your first game and all of a sudden it's stupid and a waste of time.
And should have lost your second game.
That's true as well. It is funny. You talked about Coach Garrett and the lack of information. I remember in 2016 when he told the San Francisco media that Dez was hurt before he told the Dallas media that. And like, that's how even forthcoming Garrett was sometimes. That
he'd go on a conference call with the opposing team and go, "Hey, let me tell you all who's playing this week."
Right. And so, I think obviously we're looking at things through this particular lens, but I mean, like, San Francisco is beat up, but I also think, like, you know, all sorts of coaches are doing all their radio shows and they're announcing, like, Kyle Shanahan announcing, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo's out this week, Nick Mullins is going to start, on his radio show on a Friday. In absolutely no universe could I see Mike McCarthy doing that. I don't know. I mean, it's very strange. The Trayvon Diggs thing is a great example. The Cheeto thing is another great example. I did not see any official word that he was placed on injured reserve, except for an interview with Stephen Jones from DallasCowboys.com, where either that video was supposed to be released later or it was supposed to have been made official or whatever. But all of these things, when you're not playing well, suck a little bit more. That's where we're at right now. And it sucks that the Seahawks are the next team and that they seemingly are the kryptonite, which is from a color scheme appropriate for what the Cowboys currently have operating.
How long do you think this will go on, though? Because I feel like you bring up a good point. Obviously, Jason Garrett was very forthcoming, but I think that starts from even higher than above the head coach. You know, Jerry Jones himself is the master of marketing. He's always been a guy that's kind of left nuggets, and he's very open. He goes on the radio show, what, 2-3 times a week, Stephen Jones as well. And they're very forthcoming, it seems like, for the most part. So do you feel like that he and McCarthy will be able to continue this despite their differences in styles? It feels like McCarthy came in and is like, "I am full football guy. And I appreciate the fact that you are football and marketing, but if you want me to run this ship, then I'm going to run this ship how I want to run this ship." But Jerry's still Jerry at the end of the day.
Well, and to be fair, there was a lot of power seemingly given up in terms of building the roster. Buying the groceries, as the analogy has always gone. You know, if I'm going to cook dinner, you got to let me buy the groceries. That was always the Bill Parcells
thing. Let that cook, though.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, I feel like we're not doing enough to promote the Dak Russ opposition this week as like a cookout or a cook off. Like, I think that we need to be doing more of that.
Like a cooking show.
Yeah.
Like a Beat Bobby Flay type.
Yes. So it's like, I feel like we need to have some more memes of them, like with Bobby Flay, like in the middle, and they're on each side. And they're, I feel like we need to be doing some of that. But back off to that. You've got the Mike McCarthy seemingly gave up a lot of the personnel responsibilities. And apparently Andrew Brandt told Jane and I here on the podcast that he had talked to two different teams. Andrew Brandt, who was part of the team that hired Mike McCarthy to the Packers in 2005, that a couple teams reached out to him who were wanting to talk to Mike McCarthy and wanted to get their thoughts and said, "Hey, you know, what do you think about him? Just kind of give us some feedback." And he said both of those teams, neither one of the Cowboys, had told him that Mike told them that he didn't want to, he just wanted to coach football. He didn't want to build rosters. He wanted to get back in the game of football. He wanted to coach. And so he seemingly gave up a lot of that power. So I guess I can't fault him too much for wanting things his way in the way he's coaching the team and wanting thing and gave up power in letting Kellen Moore call the offense. So I guess logistically him wanting to do things his way, I could understand the Jones as having some deference to that. And I think Steven has shown that deference, whereas he's normally been a little more forthcoming than that. He's been a little cagier on some details. I think Jerry's still Jerry. And it's like Jerry said when he canceled, you remember he canceled his interview with the Fan the day before they traded for Amari Cooper, or like the day of. And he told him later on that week, he said, "I knew what was cut and I did not trust myself not to tell you if you guys asked me." And so I think that's probably the most we're going to get on injuries anymore is, like, even if we've heard answers from Stephen Jones and Mike McCarthy during the week, everybody needs to ask Jerry in his weekly interview, go down the injury report and ask, are these people playing? And you'll get a better idea of it. But for this week, I mean, obviously no Woozie. The questions that kind of are lingering out there are Diggs, Tyron Smith, and DeMarcus Lawrence that we know of. I mean, like I said, things have been so unpredictable. Maybe we get into Sunday and they're like, oh yeah, you know, Ezekiel Elliott didn't practice all week. He's actually not playing today. I don't know how y'all didn't know that.
See, like a million people just were like, why would you jinx that, Bobby?
Oh, but
like,
yeah.
You know, like that's, I tweeted something this week and I got a million jinx responses. And that is maybe the most annoying function of
Now I believe in the jinx when it comes to like no hitters and perfect games with baseball.
That's kind of what I tweeted about.
I don't, like, you can say it early on, but if you're getting into the seventh inning, just don't talk about it. Like everybody knows it. So just don't talk about it. But yeah, I remember when I had said if Dak started like the last three games of the year, he'd be the first Cowboys quarterback in franchise history to start every game for 3 years in a row. And I got killed with the, well, now he won't. Now he's going to get hurt and he, you know, it's going to fall apart and it'll be all on you. And so I understand the little jinx aspect, but you've got Trayvon Diggs, who, like I already said, I've heard he should be fine. There shouldn't be any issue there. DeMarcus Lawrence, who, there was some talk about like, oh, he, you know, he was gone because of the birth of his child. And then it was, you know, oh, yeah, but now that he's back from the birth of his child, it's also that his knee's not great either. And so he's not practicing on Thursday either. But talking to some people, it sounds like DeMarcus Lawrence is going to play. The one that I don't feel optimistic about at all is I do not think you're getting Tyron Smith this week. And I don't know when Tyron Smith is going to come back because I think there's some frustration. And it's understandable. I think there's some frustration building on Tyron's end because this is a couple years in a row now where he seems to get hurt. And it seems like maybe there was a mismanagement during the practice week or something else. And so I think that I don't know how long it's going to be until they finally decide to roll him back out there. This may be something where they decide to sit him back and say, we need him to be really healthy. We don't need him to just be 90% or to just be able to, you know, get a shot and play through a game. We need this to be fixed because we need him to be, you know, reliably out there. Now, if Tyron Smith plays, I'll be interested to see if Terrence Steele is rolled back out there at right tackle. If we've seen anything the first 2 weeks, it seems like the MO there is a first quarter of Dak running for his life and then Terrence Steele kind of just settling down for the next three quarters and playing okay. I would personally run Brandon Knight out at right tackle if you had that chance, if Tyron Smith was going to play. But yeah, I think if Tyron and Lyle are out, I'd rather have Brandon Knight on the left side protecting that side and just hope that Zach Martin can help pick up some slack with Steele on the right side. But I would say I think out of everybody who we're kind of wondering about, I think Tyron Smith is the one guy I wouldn't expect to play this week against the Seahawks.
Is Lyle coming back after this week? Have we confirmed that yet?
No. See, that's, again, an issue of cagey details. I know he's eligible to come off next week, but I know, RJ, you had seen something Michael Gelkin from the Dallas Morning News had put in his newsletter about it.
He does they do a newsletter. It comes out almost every day, but on Tuesdays and Fridays, the fantastic Michael Gelkin adds a bit of, you know, description and explanation in Friday's edition, Friday, September 25th. He noted that Lyle Collins does not appear to be on track to return in week four. But to your point, Kelsey, he is eligible. And I think that if he doesn't return, there could, and This gets exacerbated if the Cowboys lose in Seattle, but then the panic begins because the panic, I think, was quelled by the uniqueness of injured reserve this year. It's just 3 weeks. You know, they're doing this to save a roster spot, whatever the case may be. But if Lyle isn't back, I think that people start to get irate, especially if the Cowboys are 1-2. But yeah, and for what it's worth, Michael Gelkin asked Mike McCarthy about this in his Friday press conference, and he was kind of dodgy there. You know, yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see. He's getting better. He's progressing. We haven't made that determination yet. It's all the shallowest level of information possible.
We get two answers. We get two answers from Mike McCarthy on injuries. We either get, you know, we'll see, you know, and just kind of like, I don't know, just some details packaged around we'll see as the crux of it. Or you'll just get
that impression
in that you'll get it in that Pittsburgh accent. You'll get, I don't really want to comment on that. The O goes, I like, that's the thing. That's one of the, like, when we talk about like the, Jason Garrett-isms that we always had, that's my Mike McCarthyism right now I really don't want to comment on it. And he does that.
It's
like
his version of Day by Day.
Little bit. Yeah. And so he'll do the, those are his two pat answers. Blah, blah, blah. We'll see. Blah, blah, blah. Or I don't really want to comment on that. Injury report comes out on Wednesday. That's usually what he'll say if it's a Monday or Tuesday question. But it is a little frustrating. Like I said, I'm not killing Mike McCarthy. Like, everybody has their ways of doing this. He's not the only guy who's difficult with injuries. And I understand the wanting to conceal thing. I understand you wanting the Seahawks to have to kind of game plan for maybe Tyron Smith is going to be out there, at least take away some of their preparation and have them focus on that a little bit. But looking at that, and when we look at this game on Sunday, even if he's not out there, I think that, I don't know how much you guys have watched any of Seattle yet. I mean, I'm sure y'all maybe were watching the Sunday night game last week, but as difficult as it's been for Dallas to get home with their pass rush, Seattle's right up there, and Seattle blitzes a lot. And it's really amazing to watch a blitz where, like, the quarterback is able to just stand in the pocket and not move. Like, you know, usually you got to at least see them. There's like so many people coming. Usually you got at least got to like sidestep or like you have full on pressure. Not with the Seahawks. When the Seahawks bring pressure, like blitzes, like half the time the opposing quarterback doesn't even have to move. So I think if there was a week where Tyron Smith was going to miss, this might be one of the better ones. RJ, do you feel any better having seen the way the offense could move the ball and the things that Dak could do with both tackles out as opposed to the Jets game last year where he was getting crushed and didn't really have time to do much of anything? Do you feel better about where this offense stands and its capabilities with those two out, Lyle Collins and Tyron Smith potentially, than you normally would have been?
I do in a theoretical sense, from the perspective that offensively the Cowboys, I hesitate to say figured it out, but figured it out in the second half against Atlanta. I mean, they, you know, sort of realized the hand they were dealt and how to best operate with it, you know, and I think that certainly has merit and that certainly has value. And if that is the disposition and the philosophy that carries over to week three in Seattle, then okay. I mean, you know, that's your best bet at this point. I did find it interesting on Monday, when Jerry spoke to 105.3 The Fan, and he said that there was some sort of long game being played with Tyron Smith, maybe to your point, Bobby. Okay, you know, Atlanta is Atlanta. You know, they'll find a way, which they did. Seattle, to the astute Bobby Belt's point, is not that great of a pass rush team. But Myles Garrett's coming to AT&T Stadium in week four. Maybe that is the time to really target and look towards having Tyron back. That's a bit more hypothetical. But with regards to this particular week, yeah, I think we've seen it, right? Because we hadn't seen it in Los Angeles. And so that's what I think caused a lot of hesitation going into last week. But the product is there. It's just a matter of, I'll be honest, I hate the let Dak cook thing because it's like a straight ripoff. Like, I wish we could come up with our own version. But it really is just a matter. Like, I, at this point, and Bobby, you appropriately have the four God hashtag over your right shoulder. This sounds homerish and this sounds, you know, hyperbolic, but at this point, I legitimately trust Dak Prescott to do anything. I really trust him in any surrounding. Well, like, I mean,
literally anything.
I mean, yeah, I'll go that far.
All right.
But I mean, I trust him in all circumstances, and if I have to trust someone in any particular circumstance, I want it to be Dak Prescott. And so, I mean, whether right, wrong, indifferent, fair or not, I think that's the way they're going about it this week.
Kelsey, you confident at all that they are? I mean, you look at the fact that they're probably going to have to be in a shootout with the injuries in the secondary and just the way Russell Wilson's playing. Are you confident that the Cowboys can get into shootout football if they don't have those two tackles?
Yeah, I think I am. I think, kind of like you all just mentioned, listen, we knew that the Rams obviously have some key players who can get to the quarterback. Same thing with Atlanta. While they weren't the most productive, at times, like, they still existed. This Seattle defense is not the defense of years past. We talked about how, you know, the Legion of Boom was obviously great, but it was the upfront guys who were enabling them to be great at what they do as well. So they truly had the full entire picture covered. That's not the case this year. But I'm not going to completely discredit this defense, because let's not forget that guy sitting back in the secondary who, while the pass rush is not that ideal, I don't know what Jamal Adams isn't doing back there right now.
Big Stars fan.
Yeah, big Stars fan. But you know what? He also is just, he's someone they're going to have to deal with. And so I think that it does come down to, like you mentioned, Bobby, like, it's going to be kind of a shootout. I think it's going to be Dak versus Russell. Really, who can truly perform the best this weekend, and that's kind of going to be one of the major keys to the game.
Well, and Jamal Adams, apparently he has like spies in Dallas that he has like monitoring.
Who was that, by the way?
I don't have any clue. I'm not even kidding. I think I might have a clue of who told him, and the couple people that might have told him, because I'm kind of familiar with some people in Jamal Adams' circle. But yeah. I do think it's interesting that apparently he has people monitoring Dallas media, because he said. We'll play a clip real quick. Jamal Adams, chip on his shoulder because of things he's hearing emanating from Dallas.
They have some explosive guys on that side that can make a lot of plays. So we have to do a good job of, doing our thing and plastering them and covering them. Obviously I've seen a couple of things. They said that I struggle in coverage. So I can't wait. So I got a little text from one of my buddies back home, so he has the inside scoop on that, so looking forward to it.
Little chip on your shoulder.
On my shoulder. Keep the chip on my shoulder at all times.
Who said that, or where did you see that?
I can't tell you that, man. Come on. I can't give you the nuggets like that, man. Nah, I grew up with a couple guys who are still my brother's best friends to this day. We talk every day, group message, and you know, what goes on in Dallas, you know, it always comes back to me, you know. I always find out the scoop. So just a little edge, you know, a little chip on my shoulder to go out there and continue to do what I'm doing. You know, obviously, you know, things happen. It's part of the game. And, you know, hey, I'm just looking forward to the matchup.
So, yeah, that's what you want. You don't just want all-world Jamal Adams. You want pissed off all-world Jamal Adams looking like Troy Polamalu or – like 2008 Bob Sanders or something.
He's confident.
He's confident.
You got to give him that.
I would have it was going to take too much. Him and Dallas would have been so perfect. That's exactly the energy that this defense needs, and that's the exact type of playmaker that this defense needs. But that's the last thing that this Cowboys offense needs, I feel like, is Jamal Adams going like, oh, let me motivate myself a little bit more.
Yeah, like, listen, I don't know what it is about the Seattle secondary players that would rather be in Dallas, and I'd like to make a joke about it, but in reality, I'm just sad because he truly would have been such an asset. And as we have been talking about, we could still use the help.
So. I saw Jamal had a photo on his Instagram story. It was a very popular quote. I don't know the origin of the quote. It wasn't the, like, Wayne Gretzky quote in his own thing, like from The Office, that gets tired as well. But it was the old-fashioned, do today what others won't, so that tomorrow you can do what others can't. He's digging deep. I have a take, though, that I purposely saved and didn't text to Bobby to save for this, because you both mentioned how this has shootout potential, and I'm cautiously dropping the take because I think people will be like, there's no way it's going to be that, or Tony Romo
I love RJ's impression of generic Twitter responder, because it is always that voice
of the bitter Cowboys fan.
Yeah
like,
so
perfect.
This to me has the makings of the 2013 Cowboys Broncos game, just kind of like, I know that wasn't peak Romo, obviously, but it does feel like Dak.
No. It was peak Romo for 58 minutes and 30 seconds.
Okay, but we agree that peak Romo.
And then the final minute 30 was classic Romo.
Okay. Anyway,
I'm just trying to piss people off.
It does feel like Dak is like this is the part where like the Power Rangers like putting the thing out to morph. You know what I mean? Like the suit and the powers are coming on, and Russell is already like in Nirvana, and so it feels like the meeting of those things. And the narrative and the juice and the drip of it all just kind of has that feel for me. And I'll go out on another limb here and say it was that game that Morris Claiborne, then prominent rookie cornerback for the Cowboys, got his first interception of the season, and it was Peyton Manning's first interception of the season. And at the time, Peyton was touted as like the MVP, which he would go on to win, just like Russell is being touted right now. And so Trayvon Diggs, that's all I'm saying. I mean, there's some stuff here.
Trayvon Diggs.
I've seen this movie before.
So RJ says that Dak Prescott will throw an interception inside the final 2 minutes of a 51-48 game, and Trayvon Diggs will have an interception. And hey, you know what that'll mean? If it's all going to play out the same, that means that Dak will have broken Romo's record for 400-yard passing games.
Also, that game, a rookie Cowboys wide receiver caught his first touchdown in a Cowboys uniform in Terrence Williams. The stage is set for CeeDee Lamb to sort of deliver in this capacity.
Will you stop taking my predictions away from me already? Like, RJ, like, come on, man.
It's terrifying. It's all laid out before them. Now, one of the aspects, we sit here and, like, kind of joking about how bad the Seahawks pass rush is, but the Cowboys pass rush has probably actually been worse. And there's a little bit of this. I think that you look at, there's so many similarities to me between the way Dallas and Seattle operate in terms of, like, you know, they've got quarterbacks who can make things happen. They've got tough, physical, punishing runners. You know, they've got some of the same problems on defense where they over pursue, they fly to the ball too much, they have issues with broken tackles, they don't get a lot of a pass rush. These things, there's a lot of similarities here, and so they kind of mirror each other on both sides of the ball. That, like, you go, okay, we don't know how well they're going to block for Dak, and we don't know how well they're going to block for Russ, but on both ends, you've got pass rushes that aren't doing too great. And Everson Griffin, sworn enemy of Jeff Kavanaugh from 105.3 The Fan, he actually spoke out this week, was asked on Wednesday about the issues the Cowboys pass rush is having.
First and foremost, you know, I feel like us as a group, we have to get lined up correctly. We have to get lined up correctly. We have to play our gaps correctly. And we have to not beat ourselves. We cannot beat ourselves. We have to get lined up. We have to make the tackles. We have to make the calls. And we got to get the ball back for our offense. Our whole objective this week is keep Russell in the pocket and don't let him scramble. And we have to do that by, you know, getting back there, generating pressure. These past two games, we haven't been generating pressure that well, to be honest with you guys. And I feel like we got to do a better job at generating pressure. If that's putting big guys in the middle to get more push in the pocket, if that's switching it up, doing whatever we have to do to be able to get to generate that push in the middle, that's what we have to do.
So there you go. Everson Griffin acknowledging the issues that this pass rush has. And he added something a little bit interesting after that, where, you know, we've talked about this desire to be multiple. That was like the new buzzword. Like, you remember a couple years ago, it was wrinkles. That was the word that we were all using for Scott Linehan, was, oh, where are the wrinkles? There are going to be some wrinkles in here. So multiple was the one this year, that they wanted multiple looks on defense. They wanted to do different things. And part of that included some of these pass rushers like DeMarcus Lawrence and Aldon Smith and Everson Griffin being in a two-point stance, standing up and rushing. And Everson Griffin is apparently done with that.
How big of a difference is it rushing from having a hand on the ground to rushing standing up?
It's a big difference. I've been doing it. I've been with my hand in the dirt for the past 10 years now, and standing up a little bit. It's a little different, but, you know, I'm gonna get the hang of it. But I feel like I'm gonna go more back to my 3-point stance. You know, that's where I'm more comfortable at. And, you know, I'm gonna come off the ball and I'm gonna strike, and I'm gonna do it at a high level to be able to go out there and get this victory for my team. I feel like all the guys are ready on the defense side of the ball to go out there, execute their assignments, and be productive. Do your job, execute the assignment, and go out there and win the game.
You plan on being in a 3-point stance more this Sunday, with your hand in the dirt more this Sunday than the first 2 weeks of the season?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's where I'm more comfortable at. You know, I was trying to work it in and out, you know, and seeing where my comfortability was, you know, trying to see, do I like the 2-point? Do I like the 3-point? And I'm a 3-point man. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure I get down to my 3-point where I can be more powerful with my hands and in my feet, and I can get on guys quicker and be able to attack and move my feet better and go out there and execute my assignment and get the job done.
All right, so interesting to me, at least, that Everson Griffin is kind of like, yeah, I know there's going to be this multiple thing, but I'm really not a fit for that, so I'm going to go back to doing what I do.
I thought this was interesting. I mean, again, we just talked about it. They haven't super been transparent about what they are and aren't going to do. And Everson Griffin came out first on Twitter and then in the press conference, and he's like, yeah, this ain't for me. Here's the thing. You know, obviously he's pretty good at what he does, so I feel like I respected it. That's just not his game. But I definitely, I was surprised by the admission. How's that?
Obviously Everson is somebody who will voice his opinions and feels a level of conviction in them. And I think an underrated storyline is there was some some discussions between Everson Griffin and the Seahawks. I mean, that, you know, that almost happened to a degree. And so, hey, you know, what better time if you really want to dig for that particular emoji in the message you're sending, this is the week to do it.
I think it's interesting that even if they're able to get a pass rush, which if there's a week where they're going to be able to generate some pass rush, you would assume it would be this week with some of the struggles that, you know, Seattle has had in protecting Russell Wilson for a couple years now. But here's the interesting thing, and I may have tweeted this, actually. I think that there's nobody – Russell Wilson has been getting pressure for so long now. It's almost like he's more comfortable being uncomfortable. Like, it's like there's a pass rush doesn't rattle him. It's like he's learned to operate within
the
frenzy. No, I know. But I mean, there's a little bit of that. You remember that was the line on Aaron Rodgers for a long time, that Aaron Rodgers was actually tougher to beat when the pocket broke down. And so you wanted to keep him contained. And so
like at the end of the movie Twister, you know how they like strap themselves to that pipe when
would never ever have worked. That would not have worked.
You're right. But like, and he's like, who is the actor in that movie?
Bill Pullman.
I don't even remember. Whatever. But they're holding on to the pipe. And there's not this like gigantic level of panic. It's like, we're literally in the middle of a tornado.
An F5
right now,
tornado. But, yeah. Enough to blow everything off its foundation. But a belt will hold us to a pipe.
It was a leather belt. Your last name or your name, it means belt maker.
They missed a grand sponsorship opportunity. They should have gone to every belt maker in like the country and just said like, hey, look, we're going to have this scene where the belt in the end is the hero and it saves everyone. And we will get a close up shot of your logo on that leather belt. So people go, this will withstand anything. Where a barn falls, a belt stands tall.
And well, belt might as well have been neon green, because that's who Russell Wilson is. He's comfortable in the chaos.
Yeah, no, and that's always been you remember that was the Jason Garrett line. Jason Garrett always said, get comfortable being uncomfortable. And like Russell Wilson to me has mastered that, is that he is completely comfortable regardless of the surroundings. And it's almost like he feels... It's like the old thought about being clutch. You know how like a lot of times analytics will say there's no such thing as clutch? Or some advanced analytics people will say there's no such thing as clutch. I think that what you get is you get high pressure situations, and it's not necessarily that people step up their game or have some other thing that they're able to dial into. It's there's a difference between when those high pressure situations come or when that frenzy comes, who can just like stay level and who falls. And I think that that's what Russell Wilson is an expert at, is he can stay on the level no matter what's going on around him. And I think he's almost become used to some of the frenzy of the pass rush and being able to find some broken coverages because of all the scrambling around, and it almost may be more worth it. And I think Everson Griffin kind of spoke to that, almost may be more worth it to kind of keep him contained and not let him get out of the pocket.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, listen, like I'm all for, I think we need to continue to put pressure on Russell Wilson. Like, obviously he's great at what he does. He wouldn't be the leading MVP candidate if he wasn't good at the football. And I'd rather put him in a position where I'm forcing him to be great and really analyze and have to pick down these coverages and figure out where he's going to target versus giving him some time to truly just annihilate my secondary. So that's a big key in my mind for this upcoming game, like trying to get home to the quarterback. Obviously this defense and our pass rush hasn't been good at that thus far, but I have to hope that maybe we can move some things around. Maybe there's some extra motivation. Maybe those hot Twitter takes really are going to light a fire underneath these guys, and they're going to do what they're supposed to do and get home this weekend.
Well, this is a big game early on for the Cowboys. It's a big measuring stick for Dak Prescott. It's I feel like going to be a big ratings winner for Fox, having two of the best young quarterbacks in the game squaring off. And now we're going to welcome in comedian Dustin Nickerson and Seahawks superfan to talk a little bit about this game and talk about where the Seahawks are.
I like Texas, but I don't have to like Texas because you like yourself enough. And I appreciate that. It's like, and if I don't say that, I'll get shot. And I respect that. You're not a perfect state, though. There's times that, like, I know that because I had to drive from, a couple of years ago, I was here, I had to drive from San Antonio to Wichita Falls. Yeah, that is 7 hours of just fantasizing about a turn, you know? Maybe a hill, that'd be nice, something spice it up, you know? Like, I believe the earth is round, but if you live here and you think it's flat, I get it.
Joining us now is Dustin Nickerson. Dustin is a stand-up comedian from Seattle. He has been seen on Comedy Central, Netflix, Fox, just to name a few. He can also regularly be heard on Sirius Radio XM. Dustin is a diehard Seahawks fan. He is also the co-host of the Don't Make Me Come Back There podcast with Stephen English. And you just heard him there. He's a very funny stand-up comedian. You can follow him on social media. I believe they're all Dustin Nickerson, right? DustinNickerson.com, Dustin Nickerson Twitter, Dustin Nickerson Instagram, right?
That's correct. That is correct. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk some Mariners Rangers baseball.
That's what we love. See, now we're actually very familiar with the Mariners, not just for the rivalry, obviously, of course, with the Texas Rangers, but David Hellman, who works for DallasCowboys.com, is like this weird outlier as somebody who didn't live in Seattle or anything else, but he's like a giant Mariners fan. He actually
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. But he cheers for the Mariners, and so we constantly get trolling from him around here. So Cowboys Nation is very familiar with Mariners talk, so I think they're comfortable with that.
Rivalry is probably a stretch. It's a rivalry, and like there might be two rats fighting in your backyard, but you don't care.
No.
You know? nobody cares about this rivalry.
No, it's always
interesting backyard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. they're always either both bad at the same time, or like one of them is good while the other's bad. You never have them like both good at the same time. It's like the Angels will be pretty consistent.
Right.
And so whenever the Mariners or the Rangers rise up, that's who their rivalry is. But yeah, we never really get the mesh of Mariners and Rangers, not since the Griffey days anyway.
It just like bothers me because like there's really no reason why he should like this team. I mean, he's from Louisiana and was born in Florida, and I'm like, why do you stand this team so hard? And there's absolutely zero logic behind the situation.
I would imagine he's probably a Griffey era, right? It's living in a state that where you don't have a team, but you like LeBron. It's like,
being a Bulls fan. Yeah. Exactly. Like with Jordan in the 90s.
There were a lot of Bulls starters jackets in the 90s in Ohio, you know, wherever there wasn't a team, you know. That's exactly why he's there.
That's kind of, I know you guys came to us for basketball and baseball talk today, but it kind of spurs an interesting discussion, I think. So in the 90s, Griffey would kind of be the default for somebody who doesn't have a team. Like, okay, I'm going to follow Griffey because he's the superstar, so you become a Mariners fan. And then you follow Michael Jordan because he's the star, and you become a Bulls fan. Yeah. So who would that have been? Would that have been the Cowboys in the 90s? Did the Cowboys benefit from that?
Yeah, it seems like it, right?
What if somebody was like, man, Barry Sanders is awesome. I'm going to hitch my wagon to the Lions and see how this thing rides out.
I would not have hitched my wagon to the Lions had I not had a team. But I will say that, like, as a Cowboys fan growing up, my favorite player in the NFL, regardless of Cowboys or otherwise, was Barry Sanders. I loved watching him.
You didn't have to be a Lions fan. You just had to own Tecmo Bowl.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. No.
I think Favre might be this guy.
Yes.
Favre is that guy, like that electrifying, I root for this team because of him.
Maybe. And they were good.
In a social media-less world, it's like he drinks beer. I'm 10 years old. I think the idea of beer is cool. You know, like it's one of those things.
He wears those.
From a team perspective, like I feel like the Cowboys totally were that in the 90s. Like I've talked to several people. There's a guy like Stephen Coletti has come on one of the shows that I do with RJ on SB Nation. And literally I was like, you're from LA. Like, why are you a Cowboys fan? And he's so diehard. And he's like, listen, the 90s, like that's what was on TV, man. Like, that's what you watched. Like, how could you not be a Cowboys fan? I get it.
And 90s Cowboys truly had something for everybody. You had the clean cut guys, you know, and Aikman and Emmett. You had like the more like bad boy type or whatever. Or you had guys getting in trouble. You had like comically, bad fumbles at the goal line. As
Leon
you returned.
Lett,
like you had everything for it. Like you could be like, okay, I'm not crazy about him, but I do like this. So, and then you go and get Dion, and that just takes you into the stratosphere. Mm. So, yeah, it makes sense. And you haven't really been significant since. So
well, hey,
write it as much as you can.
Come on. Yeah, you know, it's fun because I think if you were to ask most NFL fans now, like casual NFL fans, like if they knew that the Seahawks were ever in the AFC, they would probably say no. And yet the last time the Cowboys won a Super Bowl, the Seahawks were in the AFC.
My son cannot fathom why I don't like the Denver Broncos. He does no.
Even after a Super Bowl game? How old was your son when they played him in the Super Bowl?
So, yeah, he was six. So, yeah, six. And then, you know, for him to get a title that early into his life really makes me, like, loathe him. Like,
yeah.
Because Seattle is the long-suffering sports city. I mean, we were forever. Like, you would always hear about, like, Boston and stuff. But their other teams were always winning. We were losers everywhere. And then our best team moved to Oklahoma. So we were just absolute losers. And we always lost in tragic ways, too. So when people always ask about the Patriots Super Bowl, the running on the one, it's like, was it heartbreaking? It's like, I can't believe we won one Super Bowl. Are you kidding me? Like, when we won that game 43-8, as the pessimist that I am, and I'm watching that game, and like midway through the third quarter, I'm like, we're going to give up the biggest lead in Super Bowl history. This is going to be
So wait, are you a Kraken fan then? Because I feel like, I mean, there's some promise there. Like, the way if things go the way that the Vegas Golden Knights, like how Knight, that went down,
yeah,
that would suck.
Yeah, I think that, like, it's really, really terrible that the Sonics are gone. Especially growing up in the 90s, the Sonics were the team. Like, we were a basketball town. Like, nobody, like, there the only option was a Cortez Kennedy jersey. There were no other jerseys that you were going to wear.
Kenny Easley.
What's that?
Some Kenny Easley.
Kenny Easley, Brian Blades, some outliers, yeah. You know. But and then later the Mariners kind of picked up. But I think with the Sonics leaving, like, it's really rallied the fan base in, like, every sport. I mean, even the Mariners have still pretty good attendance. And then, like, you know, when we got a soccer team, it went crazy. And I think the turnout's going to be exciting for the
kind of a sport. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Seattle had I mentioned Barry Sanders, Silverdome, fantastic name for a venue. The Kingdome, one of the all-time slept-on names for a facility.
I feel like that would be memed so much these days. If you had, like, 100%. I mean, if the Kingdome existed now, I feel like Seattle fans would be pretty unbearable on Twitter. Like, just with
there'd be all sorts of, like, Russell Wilson crown things. Oh, like, gosh. It would. I didn't think about that.
Weird. Already had that with King Felix. That was we already had a king.
Yeah, see, you did have that now. See, yeah, but I don't know that we could have been able to handle the, like, Legion of Boom era swagger playing in a building called the Kingdome. Like, that was pretty brutal. But you know, for this game coming up, you know, they're finally letting Russ cook, as that's been kind of the meme. So I guess Cowboys fans would just maybe look for some advice, some pointers, that how did your fan base literally manipulate the coaching staff into doing the right thing? And how can we do the same? How can Cowboys fans manipulate the coaching staff?
Ready,
yeah,
yeah. I'm taking notes.
Kelsey's gonna take the notes here. But how can we manipulate the Cowboys coaching staff into, like, stopping running on first down and actually letting Dak Prescott cook?
Yeah, I think you've got to turn to your celebrities, right? I mean, our celebrity fans were pretty outspoken, you know, like, you've got your Chris Pratts, your Joel McHales, your Rainn Wilsons, you know, like, who were pretty vocal, like, supporters and always tweeting about the games and stuff like that. I mean, Dallas has a million, obviously, famous fans.
Chris Harrison, so he's going to solve
The Bachelor
for us.
Yeah.
Yep.
We can get all the Bachelorette girls on it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's that, and then just for, like, six seasons in a row, have both of your running backs get hurt within the first 5 weeks, and then you just don't have a choice, I think. I don't know, other than that, but he definitely has kind of let loose, and it seems like social media made him to let him do it. I mean, it took him longer than it should, but you know, Pete's also like 80. So I understand that he might not have been on Twitter. But if any 80-year-old was going to be on Twitter, it's going to be Pete Carroll.
Yes. I was going to say, he's like the 40-year-old, 80-year-old guy. Like, he does not look as old as he is. I'm like, how, like, what are you drinking and where do I get some? Like, my goodness.
And he's got so much energy. And I think everybody generally views him as like a... Like, he's got so many, like, cool dad vibes a little bit coming from him. And I think the players kind of gravitate towards that. But it is interesting just that they have decided to, you know, finally let Russ cook. I'm curious, do you get any sense that, like, Seahawks fans are... Because, see, this is what we're fighting on our end. I think about half the fan base goes, let Dak Prescott go nuts. Let him do the Russell Wilson treatment here. And then you've got about half the fan base that still goes like, well, no, the way you win football games is, you know, it's like you hand it off to Newt Rockne and you go. And so it feels like there's a little bit of that push because they're like, well, you got Ezekiel Elliott. You got the best running back in the league. You don't need to throw the ball. Is there any bit of that sense from any Seahawks fans like, well, come on, we're kind of wasting Chris Carson over here. He's such a bully runner. He could be a superstar.
Listen, I love Chris Carson.
And Chris Carson's I genuinely think Chris Carson may be the most underrated player in football. I'm kind of joking.
He's
I'm
on my fantasy serious. Team. What's up?
He's very good.
Big Chris Carson fan. That you compared him to Ezekiel Elliott is the funniest thing that'll be on the show today. Nobody is like, man, we are underusing Chris Carson. it's when you have Russell Wilson who throwing like 16 passes a game, that's a little and eats up like 90% of your salary. You know, like, this seems a little disproportionate. So it's our fan base is divided in a different era to me. It's like there are people who were fans before Pete Carroll and people who weren't. And the people who are fans like now are like all these like crazy, like hopeful optimists. And like,
cause they've never known anything better. Yeah. They've never known.
They don't even remember 05. Yeah. Like, I remember in 05, it was hard when we played the Steelers, like it was hard to find a Super Bowl party. Like, it's a new fan base and a good fan base, but they have no real appreciation for that. So that's more the divide. And my side is like, well, whatever we do, it'll eventually make us lose anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, wait, how about not having any fans? I mean, I feel like that's just such a huge thing for a component whenever teams travel up to Seattle, and now that that's no longer, I mean, do you feel like you guys lose a little bit of your advantage? I can't help but imagine you're a little weary about some guys coming in without that added element.
I think like 3 years ago, maybe, but like last season, I think we were way worse. I don't think we were way worse at home than we were on the road. I think we were like 500 or I don't remember exactly, but we were very beatable at home last year. So maybe people just got used to it, but some of that is like, you know, noise helps defense more than it helps offense. And so I think during the heyday of the Legion of Boom, like, and you know, when we had all of them, Earl Sherman and, you know, Bobby and all of them were there, I think the noise helped them more. Where right now you can be making all the noise in the world, but if you only have one good cornerback, that doesn't matter. You know,
who's the one good cornerback? Cause I was watching some, it's looked like they don't have many good quarterbacks at all. From what I've seen,
they line up Adams at cornerback too. I think.
Oh, see, man, like Adams. I think Jamal Adams leads the Seahawks in sacks through 2 weeks because they don't get any pressure. I think he also leads the team in passes defended, so and tackles. So I mean, he's literally doing everything. He's rushing the passer and you know, defending receivers, and then he's also like making plays in the run game. Now, was that a I know Cowboys fans were. First, they lusted after Earl Thomas, which I know you're well aware of. Everybody knows the Earl-Dallas dynamic that existed. And there's a little bit of poetry here in that then they kind of lusted after Jamal Adams, and of all places that ends up forking over the amount to trade for him, it ends up being the Seahawks. Now, a lot of people felt like that was just too steep a price. Even Cowboys fans weren't willing to give that up for Jamal Adams. But happiness with the return so far for you?
I mean, 2 games in, you've got to be pretty – he's an energy guy too. So it's like having a Russ on defense, you know, as far as like he's a rally guy, he's a leadership guy, you know, he's an energy guy. It seems like I mean, it's hard to imagine us being 2-0 without him. That's for sure. Because like you said, you're just like, if you're just casually listening, you would think that there were like three defensive players named Adams. Like they just keep saying Adams and he keeps doing different things, you know? Yeah. So far, I mean, when we lost Clark last season and then when we didn't sign Clowney, it kind of seemed like, hey, I love Bobby Wagner, big Bobby Wagner guy, little old, you know, he's more the veteran.
Still a good player though. He played really well against the Falcons week one.
Yeah. Well, and apparently he was the one that said like, this is what Cam is doing on the run, which I mean, all of us kind of knew, but like on the 1 yard line last week. But so, you know, he's still a veteran, but it's nice to have like a young guy in his prime back out there just wreaking havoc. So seems like it.
Now, I'm curious, you mentioned Denver as a team you hated. Obviously, there's a San Francisco bitterness, and that was kind of like peak LOB stuff.
Yeah.
I look at everything through the lens of the Cowboys, which is an extremely narcissistic lens. And and I feel like there's this cosmic sort of like eyes across the dance floor energy between the Cowboys and Seahawks. It was the biggest win. I think Bobby would agree. And I think Kelsey too, maybe that the Cowboys have had in the regular season, the last decade was the 2014 win at Seattle.
Yep.
And that was more about, you know, being emblematic of who they were, that sort of sparked the
game.
That was the Terrence Williams third down. Yeah.
Let's go.
And that was sort of like the polar opposite of let Russ cook. That's like hand the ball off a million times, dominate time of possession. And everybody obviously thought they'd meet in the NFC Championship game that year. And every Cowboys fan believes they would have won that game or whatever. And, you know, and then there's the Earl Thomas thing that happened in the game that Zeke Elliott returned from suspension. That was the last game that Dez Bryant ever played at AT&T Stadium. There was the wild card game, which kind of birthed the let Russ cook movement. A lot of people have equated Dak to Russ.
Tony Romo's career ended essentially in a preseason game in Seattle.
Yeah, and that was Ezekiel Elliott's debut and Dak Prescott's sort of assimilation after Zeke visited an establishment in Seattle and took a lot of flack for that. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff, basically. And so is that shared or is that just a narcissistic point of view?
No. I think that's shared. There's the Romo fumble game, which
that's true too.
I forgot about that. The K-ball, as they called it. They called it the K-ball, which is a special ball they used over there that was considered to be slipperier, and that was considered a home field advantage. They had replaced the ball.
I mean, what was he doing in there anyways? I mean, I understand he was the backup. But, yeah, and then, Bobby, to your point, right, it was the Chancellor hit to the back, right, that kind of ended.
Yeah, or who was it? It may have been Averill. It was Cliff Averill.
Oh, Averill.
Cliff
Sorry.
Averill. Yeah, no, yeah. Chancellor – that
took
game,
on Zeke.
Yeah, Chancellor was the one hitting Zeke really hard on that drive, and they were trash talking. But yeah, there's some energy there.
Yeah, I mean, they've been playoff teams or in and around playoff teams. I mean, the Cowboys, as much as, you know, they are like the punching bag, you know, they're an easy punchline. Like, you guys, they are in and around playoff talk every year. And so are the Seahawks. And so it just makes sense that they get a lot of primetime games. You know, they've gotten a few playoff games in there. So I think that's definitely there. We have that with a couple other teams too, like the Packers, you know, just like we keep.
Oh, don't get us started.
So do we.
Yeah. So
we all hate them.
No, see, I can't hate the Packers. The fans, I can't. They're just too nice.
Okay, but can you at least hate Aaron Rodgers?
I cannot be crazy about Aaron. Aaron Rodgers should have never been in Green Bay, just as a personality. It's a bad fit.
That's one of the worst fits in terms of like big personality and type of personality and backdrop. It is a little bizarre.
Yeah,
that's actually, I never thought about that, honestly.
Yeah, there. You know, he's a Bay Area guy, and it's just like, it just, I mean, in some ways, it like Favre, when he was there, I know I'm off the rails here, but Favre, when he was there, small town and no internet, probably kept Favre out of trouble for a long time. Because as soon as he got a phone in his pocket, it didn't win.
Yeah,
bad.
there wasn't a lot of Jen Sturgers or whatever in the Green Bay area. You can't date Danica Patrick and live in Green Bay. It's just, it is a bit
Olivia
of an off fit.
Is not going to Wisconsin. She's like, listen, this is not a thing. Like, love you, but like, I mean, see ya after the game.
I mean, Russ, look how much Russ had to change his whole personality just to keep Ciara in Seattle. You know, like, they had to, like, just kind of become something else. And Seattle's obviously way bigger than Green Bay. But so I do think that that energy is there. And but I just think that any teams that play in big games and then have, like, something about Pete Carroll football is always very dramatic. Like, when or lose, like, we get in these games and we get in these weird rivalries and these crazy things happen. And yeah, we've had a bunch of them with you guys. So yeah, no, I definitely feel that.
So I'm curious here as we're just wrapping up, when there's a little bit of a split with the fan base. Like I said, there's a lot of people who seem to want to be like, let Ezekiel Elliott be the key to the offense. And I think the Venn diagram of those people that were big Tony Romo fans is just a giant circle and some people who hold some bitterness about Dak Prescott getting that job. And then there's another half that says, you know, he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league. And it feels like there's a little bit of this Joe Flacco energy around Dak now with the national conversation of a bunch of people going, oh, he's elite. And other people saying, no, he's trash. Nobody's scared of Dak Prescott. So I'm curious, as a Seattle fan, them coming in this week, does Dak Prescott concern you? Is he somebody that when you're entering the game, are you like, man, we got to stop. We can't let Dak beat us.
Yeah, I mean, I would think in the state of the Seahawks defense, any quarterback scares me.
Literally anything on the field.
Yeah, if you can throw a ball, I'm pretty scared. Like, everyone's talking about, like, Drew Brees can't throw anymore. I was like, wait till we play him. I'm not convinced that Cam is that good. I think our defense is that bad. So, and you guys have way more weapons, you know, at least, like, flashy weapons than the Patriots. So I would say, you know, Dak is a great quarterback. It's so funny, like, this over-analysis thing where everyone's like, is he elite? I was like, I mean, he's one of the 10 best quarterbacks on the planet. Is that not good enough?
That's the thing. People would fight you on saying he's one of the 10. You'll have some people who will swear to you, like, he's like the 25th best in the league. Like, you'll have Cowboys fans that will tell you that.
They're going to sneak Tannehill in there over him?
Yes.
They would.
No,
they
really would. I'll tell you what. I'll go on Twitter after we're done here. I'll look for some of the tweets. I'll go ahead. I'll tag you in them. I will find you the tweets of people saying, I think we should just let Andy Dalton start and let Dak Prescott walk. There are lots of them. There are lots of them. There are people who believe. See, when you said, if you can just throw a football, I kind of scare you. That made me think, okay, well, then your only hope is Andy Dalton comes into the game. Because Andy Dalton showed in one play last week he couldn't throw a football anymore.
I forgot you guys had Andy Dalton.
Yes.
Is it just me or does he look like the bully in A Christmas Story?
Oh, he is. Scott Farkas. Yeah, he is very Scott Farkas.
Okay, so I'm not that original on it.
The way he does his hair and everything. Well, see, when it panned across the sideline, I was like, whoa,
I've always thought of him as more Syndrome, the adult bad guy from Incredibles. Call.
That's hilarious.
That, like, because it's the hair, especially. I mean, just in general, it feels really easy to just say any redhead looks like another redhead. But I tell you what, the Cowboys have had that market cornered for years. The redheaded backup quarterback, because it's Dalton. Jason Garrett was the backup, and then he was the head coach. You had Brandon Whedon.
Cooper Rush
was the backup.
I'm not convinced Kyle Orton didn't have a little shade of red, like he was like auburn-y.
That's true.
Yeah.
Kitna had a pink head.
Yeah, I mean, that's close. It's
close.
It's in the
like at the stem. Sure.
Yeah, it's in the same shaded area. Sure.
I love John Kitnap. Oh, hey, John Kitnap.
We do too. He is one of that's probably that was probably the most unpopular move of the offseason was letting John Kitnap go after being quarterback's coach here. But
yeah,
you know, if Dak Prescott is allowed to cook like Russell Wilson is, I think people will get over it pretty quick.
Yeah. I'm a Dak fan. I like Dak. I like Dak for speaking out over the depression and the stuff with his brother more than ever. And the idiot pundits responding to him, it just made me love him even more. So yeah, I mean, who am I to say it's so hard. There's so, you know, you can take system, you can take coaches, you can take all those things amazingly good. But now more than ever, you will never catch me saying a bad word about Dak, but I do hope he throws like 6 interceptions this week.
well, you won't find him saying a bad word about Dak. Occasionally you'll find him saying a bad word about Texas in his stand-up comedy. As I said, when we played that clip, he does. He was very nice about Texas. I was sitting, I saw Dustin in January when he came to the Addison Improv with Taylor Tomlinson, who is another very funny comedian. He was very complimentary of Texas, but you can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Dustin Nickerson, and then check out his work over on his website, DustinNickerson.com. Dustin, thanks so much. And, you know, hopefully Chris Carson carries the ball 40 times on Sunday.
I think they're going to hand it off to Adams. I think he's RB this week.
All right. Thank you again to Dustin Nickerson. Loved having him on. Again, you can follow him on social media at Dustin Nickerson. Yes. Round of applause there. Now, looking at this game, Cowboys Seahawks, we're going to touch on one more thing right here after predictions, but I want to go around the table real quick for some predictions. I'll start off. I got to be honest. I thought, and I said this with Lori Horesh on our last episode that we did earlier this week. I thought this team was going to get a natural bounce a la Wade Phillips. That when Wade Phillips came in, it was just such a freeing thing and a new, fresh thing that they got a natural bounce from it. I haven't seen that yet, and it almost feels like more of the same. Even winning last week, there was the same sort of just awful, seemingly awful preparation and mental errors and some of those same sort of issues. So now I'm kind of dialing back my expectations, I think, for this team. And that's not a slight on what Mike McCarthy may be able to do as a coach and as somebody who's going to strategize for the long term. But in terms of that natural bounce I thought they'd get, I think that may be gone now. So I just don't know how you're going to slow down Russell Wilson. I think it'll be a shootout, and I don't know that Dallas is going to be able to completely keep up. So I'll say that the Seahawks take this one. They're going to pass 30 points again. I'll say they beat the Cowboys 38-28.
Wow. Well, I'm going to go ahead and be your shining light, Cowboys fans, because
a star at night, to be clear.
Yes. Thank you. Wow. That was really good. In the midst of you two Grim Reapers, and I'm going to give the Cowboys the win. I am very scared. Do not get it twisted. But I do think that I agree with you, Bobby. It's going to be a shootout. I think you're going to see a lot of up-tempo offense on both sides of this game. I think it really is going to be a quarterback matchup to remember, if you will. But I'm going to go ahead and count out all of the nastiness that we saw in the first quarter of last week and hope that we're really tightened up. I hope this defense, the pass rush, is going to get home maybe a little bit more than they have at the beginning of this season. And then the rest of the second level in the secondary, just play a little bend, don't break. Like, come on. Like, it's fine. So
order up a Rod Marinelli special.
Yeah. Like, it's good. It's good. I'm going to give Team 40 Burger another 40. So
we ban that phrase on this show.
I trademarked it. I don't know whose it was, but it's mine now. Just kidding.
So Team 40 Burger is alive and well.
Team 40 Burger, honestly, on both sides of this spectrum. So I think the Cowboys win it 40-37. Greg the Leg's going to be the deciding factor. I think CD gets his first NFL touchdown. It's going to be a game to remember, and I am looking forward to it.
RJ?
Somebody already predicted a CD touchdown. Interesting.
So my notes.
I will say, Well, Kelsey, you said tighten up. I know that was T-I-G-H-T-E-N. The Tennessee Titans play the Minnesota Vikings this week, just to be totally clear. The Tennessee Titans were in the AFC Championship game last year, and a lot of people are like, oh, the AFC Championship game is happening in week three. The Chiefs and the Ravens are playing on Monday Night Football. And I think we all probably agree that's probably the likely AFC Championship game. I think that this is the eventual NFC Championship game. So I – long term, still believe. However, I think the Cowboys, perhaps on a season long scale, need what they have kind of needed in an individual game scale in terms of a quarter to warm up. And I don't think they're ready for Russell Wilson. I think that Dak is ready, but I think so. I don't know if either of you have seen the show Chef on Netflix. It's fantastic. I don't work for them. I work for SB Nation. But it's about Jon Favreau and Chef Roy, and they just like cook stuff.
Chef Roy White.
On the subject of like letting Russ cook and letting Dak cook, or letting Dak cook, on the show, Chef Roy is like this actual chef who is like has this like freedom, this culinary freedom to like make all the things he wants. That's Russell Wilson. Jon Favreau is this dude who's like got this extreme passion for cooking, but is limited by his own sort of fears and inhibitions towards it. And it takes Chef Roy like urging him, like, no, Jon, come on, try it out, man. We're here at the you know, Lucasfilm.
This
you
sounds
know,
like Ratatouille
thing.
With people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so my point is like, I don't think that Dak has the same, you know, latitude and longitude to cook the way Russell Wilson does. And I think that that is going to weigh him down. And I think that that's the difference. I will take Seattle 37-34. And I think it will be an encouraging performance in a vacuum, but that all hell will break loose on Twitter next week, which is really kind of, I mean, every week.
So but, in other words, when it comes to cooking, RJ Ochoa believes that Dak Prescott is more Jesse Pinkman and Russell Wilson would be more
example.
Walter White.
That's another, a very different type of, you know, art, if you want to call it that.
Let's cook. That was the phrase.
I mean, that's true. And you know, that blue kind of is like the Seahawk blue, you know, like the old Seahawk blue.
Little bit.
I bet Dustin would appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, the Seahawk blue.
The current cowboy blue pants though.
So, I knew that was coming.
So, no, I don't know. We will wrap up here on a positive note. I was going to do predictions last, but I wanted to throw this in here because this clip went viral from the Falcons after the game on Sunday, which was Hayden Hurst talking to Dak. So here's actually the clip of Hayden Hurst talking to Dak and then Dak Prescott talking about it a little bit later this week.
Hey, I got a lot of respect for what you
appreciate
did. Came
you.
Out and talked about. Me and my mom have a foundation about suicide prevention.
Yeah.
Respect the hell out of you
appreciate
for talking
you,
about
we
it,
can
man.
Collab one day.
Absolutely.
What did it mean to you if Hayden Hurst come up to you after the game last week?
Yeah, that was awesome. Special moment. Obviously excited after a big win like that. But for him just to come over there, us embrace that moment. He tell me about what him and his mom are doing with their foundation. I'm excited to work with him. I mean, we've talked since. I'm excited in the offseason for us to get something going or have our teams already start making steps to do that while we're in the midst of the season.
Did it surprise you that Aaron Ponder will come up to you right after the game and tell you something like that?
No, not at all. I mean, obviously, that's something that's near and dear to his heart. And so, I mean, that means a lot to him. A couple of players did it last week. So I think it depends on that player, what it means to them, what they've been through personally. And I'm proud of Hayden from where he's come from and the things that he's been through and thankful, obviously, for that moment as well.
And actually, that kind of conversation spurred another discussion in Green Bay, of all places. You had Matt Schneidman from The Athletic. He asked Aaron Rodgers on Wednesday about Dak Prescott speaking out and some of the fallout from the Skip Bayless criticism. And Aaron Rodgers actually gave a really long and positive answer about Dak.
Aaron, I hope it's okay. I take this in a non-football direction, but it kind of got me thinking just listening to some of the things you've said the last couple weeks about headspace and happiness and hearing what Dak Prescott said after his brother's death. What value do you think it has when people in a high profile position like you and him talk about mental health? And do you think that needs to be more part of the discussion to help destigmatize that when NFL players talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's been a lot of players across the sporting leagues who spoke out. You know, I know that Kevin Love said some things a few years ago, and at the time, I remember some of the responses to it. There's a weird stigma around it that it's almost weakness to either ask for help or to admit you're struggling with things or admit, you know, thoughts you might have, that negative thoughts about yourself. I think this, you know, strength is taking care of yourself and taking care of your mind and understanding how important your thoughts are because they become things, and understanding how important positivity is and your attitude, and waking up each day with the right focus and the right mindset, and taking time to be quiet during your day, and whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, you know, and still your mind, allow your brain to rewire itself and change, you know, change the outlook and of the cells in your body, get them to get out of protection mode and into growth mode. I think it's great. You know, when I saw what Dak said, I applaud him. I think he's phenomenal in speaking out, because that's true courage and that's true strength. It's not a weakness at all. It's not, you know, and anybody who attacks it, you know, that has other people's opinions of ourselves have really nothing to do with us. That's a great line I heard. And other people's opinions of Dak has nothing to do with him. Those are their own insecurities about their inability to deal with their own, probably. And I applaud Dak, and I think Hurst as well had some words for him after the game. I think it's a beautiful thing when people start talking about it, because I think at the bare minimum, it makes you more relatable to people that, you know, we have the same struggles and the same issues and the same desires to grow and change and see things in a better positive light that so many people out there do. And I think the more that we can connect with people, especially on conversations like this you're talking about, Matt, I think the better our society can be moving forward as a connected society built around love and positivity.
All right, so a lot of positivity surrounding the work that Dak Prescott's done. It's just goes to show that, you know, a lot of that negative energy that was there, it's kind of, you know, squeaky wheel gets the oil, and Skip Bayless was the squeaky wheel, and he was just the loud negativity booming out, the vocal minority. But it's good to see a lot of people around the league supporting Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott obviously inspiring a lot of people and driving a lot of good change, as, you know, Dustin Nickerson even said. That's one of the things that stands out to him as an opposing fan is how much he respects Dak Prescott for that. So that's good stuff. And how much I respect Kelsey Charles and RJ Ochoa. More Kelsey, it goes without saying. You can follow them both on Twitter at Kelsey_Charles. We'll work on the underscore. I don't know. Kelsey Charles should be available, I would think. And then you can follow RJ on Twitter at RJ Ochoa. Guys, thank you for joining me. And we'll have Jane Slater back with us next week.
Nobody is like, man, we are underusing Chris Carson.